Chapter 7. Caldera, Beyond Torrens. The Thunderhawk's honours spear and triumph of Himalaya flew over the city. Curran sat with Preco in the cockpit of honours spear. Through the viewing blocks, he had a disturbingly complete view of Lacolith's agony. Rocket contrails, interlocking lasfire, and explosions lit the night. The eroded skyline crumbled more with every second. The orcs purged entrenched positions by raising entire regions. Preco avoided the walkers and the heaviest concentrations of enemy forces, and Corlan saw how much the manoeuvre cost him.
"You believe you are abandoning your brothers," Corlan said. "I understand the importance of the mission. Your understanding has no bearing on your instincts, brother."
"No,"
Preco said after a minute. "It does not. You are not abandoning them. They are buying us the chance of victory. If we fought for them now, we would be throwing away their effort."
"Their sacrifice, you mean?"
"Yes, their sacrifice. A price your chapter master is willing to pay. If we are successful, I hope we will bring an end to the cost. Whatever happens, he has my thanks, as do you."
Preco gave him a curt nod. "As I said, I understand the necessity of this course of action. It is still difficult."
"I know what it is to lose brothers," Curran thought. He said nothing. His losses did not matter in this moment. It was important that Preco express his unease in leaving the field while his company fought. Important to acknowledge that pain, so the exemplar could focus all the more keenly on the goal ahead. "Take us to the Primarch," Curran thought, "and we will end this war." The Thunderhawks climbed. The inferno of Lacolith dropped away. Preco swung around the worst of the struggles, and even then, crackling anti-aircraft energy slashed at the gunship.
"They want us contained as badly as we wish to hold them," Curran said.
"A good sign," said Preco.
They left Lacolith behind. They flew east, then angled north as they approached a plateau. Fires guttered below. Curran caught a glimpse of a ruined wall. Then another settlement below passed too quickly to tell if anything remained of it. Preco used the twin volcanoes as beacons. Sporadic fire continued to track them from the jungle.
"They've left sentries," Preco said, veering sharply to starboard as another gun targeted them. "Since when do orcs stay behind when the main army moves?"
"Since Ardamantua. Since these greenskins arose. Expect the worst always, brother. I've seen the worst, and I still underestimate their tactical acumen."
Honor's spear and triumph of Himalaya passed over the scarred jungle and on to the rocky terrain beyond. Ahead, the night raged. Gun and cannon fire, bursts of flame. There was war there, on a smaller scale than in Lacolith, but no less brutal, no less desperate. Corland hoped the orcs were as desperate as they seemed. The force left behind would have been enough on its own to take a militia-defended city. When the flames rose high, Corlan saw the silhouettes of tanks, the rush of war bikes, a large mass of infantry. The Thunderhawks drew nearer. The confused actions of the orcs became clear. There was no front line. There was no position they were attacking, and no opposing army. There were circular movements. The orcs centered their attacks on a point, and the point kept moving. It cut slashes of destruction through the orc formations. Massive concussions, greater than any artillery shell, rippled out from that point.
"Is that?"
Preco began. He spoke softly, awed by something that could not yet be seen.
"It must be," Curran said, just as quiet. "That is where we must strike." "We can't land."
"We are prepared."
Corland had ordered the two squads of the last wall to equip jump packs.
"Come in as close and low as you can. We've had enough of attacking them from the outside. This is the epicenter. The enemy has expended great effort to keep us from there. Let the orcs' defeat begin with that failure."
Preco dropped the nose of the gunship. The black shapes of the foothills rushed in. Corland voxed orders to the troops in both Thunderhawks.
"Open the side doors. We jump into the midst of the cauldron.
A line of energy cannons opened up at the foot of the last slope. They put up a coruscating wall of destruction.
They really don't want us here,
Preko grunted. Beams cut into the port side of the hull. Honor's spear slewed away, engines howling as Preko strained against the controls. Smoke entered the cockpit. Courland blinked through the squad readouts on his lenses. The runes were steady green across the board. To port, the Triumph of Himalaya was too close to the barrage. With no room to evade, it flew straight through the beams. Flames haloed its engines. It was flying, but dropping fast. Preko looped the spear around and pummeled the ground with autocannon rounds. A bright flash on the ground created a narrow gap. Preko took it. The gunship flew through the curtain of anti-air fire. It shuddered violently in flight. Courland watched the yoke buck in Preko's hands.
How long can you stay aloft? For as long as necessary. You'll have air support. My thanks again, Brother Preko, Courland said.
He pulled the door of the cockpit open and joined the squad for the leap. The last wall plunged to earth. The two squads leapt from the Thunderhawks, jetpacks streaking fire. Their bolters were on full burst all the way down. They cut Orcs down during their flight and landed with a force of vengeance. Courland shattered the spine of a green-skinned warrior, the impact of his mass and velocity snapping the brute's armor. He stomped on the struggling Orc's head, crushing it against jagged volcanic rock. The last wall created a crater of flesh. The squads stood in a hole in the midst of the horde. The Orcs had been charging a few dozen meters to the north. For a moment, there was still a wall of Xenos might between Courland and the moving target. Confusion took hold as the Orcs came under attack from two points in their midst. Some of them turned to face the last wall. Others stayed focused on their first enemy. For a moment, a few seconds during which Courland knew but could not see that he had reached his target. He knew what he was about to encounter, but the knowledge had no true weight. There was no visceral understanding. There could not be. He was still on one side of the barrier that separates belief in a legend from its experience. He fired into the Orcs, separating him from the legend. He and his brothers charged into the mass. Courland began to cross the barrier. The moments passed. Belief met reality, and the shockwave killed dozens of Orcs. Something struck a battle wagon. Courland could see the upper portions of the hull from his position. There was the sound of a single blow, and the vehicle stopped dead. The rear jerked upwards, as if the forward section had been driven into the ground. A concussion wave radiated outwards from the tank's position. The battle wagon exploded. Orcs flew through the air. Courland staggered as the wave hit him, a sudden hurricane. The blow scythed the enemy before him. The space ahead of the last wall was clear, surrounded by bodies, lit by the flames of a burning tank. The legend was there. Time stuttered. Courland's senses grappled with awe. His existence before his transformation into a space marine was a blank. The history of that earlier being was lost. So now, for the first time in his memory, he experienced what an unenhanced mortal felt at the sight of the Adeptus Astartes. Vulcan was a colossus, more pillar than man. He was an icon carved of granite and night, immovable as a mountain, ferocious as lava. The deep green of his armor's scales made him a reptile sprung from the dreams and fears of humanity's past. The forged flames of its design made him the fire of a planet's core. The skull of one beast adorned his shoulder guard. His cloak was the hide of another. He was a slayer of myth, and he was myth incarnate. His massive hammer pulsed and crackled with energy. Courland could not imagine lifting it, never mind wielding it. He found it even more impossible to picture anything, be it orc, void ship, or world, that could survive its strike. It was all Courland could do not to fall to his knees. He was not alone. He was surrounded by the stunned immobility of his battle brothers. They did not forget their training and leave themselves vulnerable to the enemy. They were frozen for the space of a single intake of breath, and the orcs in their vicinity that still lived were incapacitated for much longer.
But oh, the time of that breath stretched to infinity. Though Courland had witnessed a moon open its jaws and roar, it was only now that he felt the true touch of the sublime. A breath, and his life was in a point of culmination. His existence was already divided into two irreconcilable halves by the destruction of the imperial fists. Now it broke in two again. This time, the far side of the crevasse was filled with a fiery light of glory. The breath, and then war. No words passed between Vulcan and the last wall. They would come later. Now there was the necessity of battle. Courland looked up at the Drake helm and the infernal red of its lenses. Vulcan inclined his head in a nod. Then destruction came to the foothills of Caldera once more. The orcs closed in. They fought against a storm. The last wall formed a circle. They became a fist, a mailed gauntlet. The horde broke itself upon its spikes. Bolter shells punched through armor and flesh. Streams from flamers incinerated brutes who tried to close within melee distance. Monsters in piston-driven armor burned in their metal shells. They died standing and became obstacles in the path of their kin. Vulcan swung his hammer. Each blow was a meteor impact. The night flashed with the weapon's wrath. The earth trembled before its power. Braced now, Courland kept his footing. The orcs struggled forwards but were swept back again and again, and each time their ranks thinned. The terrain itself began to change. The battle shattered hard ridges to dust. Rivers of blood poured over arid stone. The softer lines of broken bodies covered the jagged shapes of rock. The stench of death, burned and wet, reached through Courland's grill. His frame vibrated with the pounding beat of the hammer. His blood rejoiced, caught by the rhythm of righteous annihilation.
"More!" Vulcan bellowed at the orcs. "Send more! Still more! Will you never be enough?"
The strength of 20 space marines and a single Primarch shattered the orcs' assault. The force that had remained to fight Vulcan had contained him, but no more. The orcs had been unable to achieve victory. Now they could not avoid defeat. As the infantry numbers diminished, the greenskins tried to conquer through swiftness. The vehicles had more room to move. They could pick up speed, or as much as the rough terrain would allow. They died all the more quickly. Squads of bikers roared by in strafing runs. Courland and the last wall lowered their aim, stitching the sides of the bikes with shells. They blasted through wheels, exploded fuel tanks. They turned the bikes into somersaulting death traps. Rolling balls of steel and fire collided with other drivers. It was destruction built on destruction. Vulcan swung his hammer sideways. The blow went through a bike and its rider without stopping. The orc machine might have been made of air. To Corlin's astonishment, mortals joined in the fight. They were a small group, no more than a score. They wore ragged mining clothes and wielded las rifles. They used the folds in the earth as cover, ducking down each time the hammer came down. They clutched the ground, weathering the wind and the shockwave, then popped up again to shoot at the orcs. The few greenskins they brought down had no impact on the struggle. Their presence and their survival was a miracle. They fought for their planet when the only hope of victory lay in the hands of others. They were a wonder. Courland looked at them with a kind of joy. Four battle wagons circled the fight. Then they converged, riding over the ridges at such speed that they almost overturned. Their turrets blazed at Vulcan. They were in each other's line of fire, and stray shells fountained earth before them. Two of them were burning as they closed in. Courland pulled a crack grenade from his belt. He turned his attention from the slaughtered infantry to assist, but the tanks were already there. Vulcan disappeared in the nexus of shell bursts. The glare faded, revealing his massive form leaping at the nearest battle wagon. A mountain sailed through the air. He landed on the front of the tank and his boots drove through its armor. The vehicle veered to the left. Vulcan raised his hammer over his head with both hands and brought it down, crushing the upper turret. The shockwave made Corlin's head ring. Metal cried in agony, and Vulcan was already charging at the next tank as the first exploded. Courland fought. He brought the enemy down. He was not distracted by Vulcan's actions, yet he bore witness. And afterwards, when he thought of the battle, he could barely remember his own role. There was room in his memories only for the sight of a Primarch's wrath. Vulcan ran into the battle wagon at full speed. The impact halted the tank, and its forward hull crumpled. The giant of myth took the vehicle apart with two blows, and their thunder was so huge, the ammunition blasts that followed were mere echoes. The orcs did not retreat. The last two battle wagons hurled themselves at the legend and to oblivion. The legend was indestructible. The legend was bedrock and magma. He was tectonic strength and tectonic fury. Courland had a vision of this world having given birth to its champion, of Caldera itself striking back at the orcs in retaliation for the wounds it had suffered at their hands. The storm passed. The enemy lay dead. The rounded, wide peak of the hill and the slopes on all sides were a vast, open tomb. For the first time since the war began, Courland looked upon defeated orcs. The first small measure of justice for his slaughtered brothers had been exacted. Shattered and broken bones, all burned black, blended with each other in twists of pain. The flames in the corpses of vehicles burned low. Night returned, but not full dark. With the glare of war gone, a dimmer, more diffuse glow asserted itself. It came from the clouds. They reflected the glower from the craters of the volcanoes to the north. And beyond them, much further, was the great bleeding of Caldera. The stolen crust still rose to the skies. At this distance, the huge masses were little more than angry red sparks falling upwards. But the light of their blood still reached this far. The surviving mortals gathered behind Vulcan. There were fewer than when Courland had first seen them. That any lived at all was almost beyond comprehension. They were an embodiment of hope. Vulcan faced north. He removed his helm. His face was as dark as obsidian, hard as granite, noble as marble. His eyes were black with an anger more ferocious than the snarl of his helm. But when they turned to Courland and the last wall, the anger was not for them. They were curious and wary. Courland bowed low and dropped to one knee. So did all the brothers of the last wall.
"Rise," Vulcan said, his voice deep as mountain roots. "I see the insignia of the 7th Legion."
He paused, frowning as if confused by the sight of the gathered warriors. Then he blinked. The frown passed as if the question had evaporated.
"You are honored, sons of Dorne," he said.
Courland stood.
"I thank you for joining me in this struggle," said Vulcan, "though I don't imagine your presence is a coincidence."
"No, Lord," Courland answered. "We came in search of you."
Vulcan cocked his head.
"And you knew where to find me. I wonder how."
"Inquisitor Laston Veritas told us where to look."
"Veritas."
Vulcan spoke the name slowly.
"I see."
He looked thoughtful, not puzzled.
"The Imperium has need of you, Lord Vulcan," Courland said.
"Does it?"
The Primarch grunted.
"I'm sure that is the belief."
He raised his head, looking skywards as if he could see the stars.
"I am doubtful. There will come a time when I must return."
His voice was hollow.
"There will come a war. This is not that time or that war."
"Orcs have stood in the great chamber of the Imperial Palace. An attack moon is in orbit over Terra. The worlds of the Imperium burn at the hands of an enemy who has made its home on Ulanor. If not now, if not for this war, then when?"
Vulcan's eyes blazed.
"Ulanor."
Courland nodded. He gestured to the warriors of the last wall.
"Already extreme measures have been necessary. The successor chapters to the Imperial Fists fight under a single command.
Successor,
Vulcan began. Again there was a moment of confusion, quickly dismissed.
Your command,
he asked.
Yes, it is my burden and my honor as the last Imperial Fist.
Vulcan's eyes hardened.
Explain yourself. On Adamantua, the orcs exterminated my chapter. Only I survived.
Vulcan looked off into the distance. Corland wondered what grim mysteries the Primarch contemplated.
Ulanor,
Vulcan said again. Deep beneath his calm, Corland heard a stream of pain. The world's name would be a more terrible echo of triumph turned to ashes for the Primarch than for any other living human.
The Emperor destroyed the Orc Empire on that world.
Though Vulcan spoke quietly, his voice still resonated through Corland's frame.
Now they have returned, Corland said, and threatened to destroy the Emperor's work.
Vulcan turned his attention to the other space marines.
Tell me who you are. We are the Last Wall,
Eternity said.
We answer the call of Chapter Master Corland. Terror will not fall on our watch, and the Imperial Fists will not vanish.
So,
Vulcan said to Corland,
you maintain your charge and rebuild that which has been shattered.
I must.
Yes, I have known your burden.
He nodded to himself.
So, tell me what you wish of me.
Other chapters are gathering on Terra as we speak.
Corland hoped that was true.
Lead us all to Ulanor. Under your command, we will destroy the beast.
He gestured to the Thunderhawks coming into land.
We can depart immediately.
No,
said Vulcan. Corland tried to articulate a response. He had imagined not finding Vulcan. He had been forced to imagine the possibility of another defeat. He had not imagined the Primarch's refusal. His awe began to give way to anger. Vulcan spoke again before Corland could retort.
Not now, he said. I accept Terra's need. I will never turn from my duty to my father, but my duty is here too.
He raised his arm. He pointed north to the distant pulse of a world being taken apart.
I will not abandon Caldera. I swore an oath to protect it, and that oath is 1,000 years old.
Lord Vulcan, Eternity said, there is little time.
There never is. That changes nothing. Will you sacrifice Terra for Caldera?
Vulcan stared at Eternity. The fire of his gaze was cold and as hard as judgment. He took a single step to the right, putting the mortals in Eternity's direct line of sight.
You have seen the people of this world. You have seen them fight. You have seen their spirit. Will you abandon them?
No, Corland said. We will not. The Primarch was right. To abandon the spirit shown on Caldera to oblivion would be a crime.
We will fight for Caldera, and we will fight for Terra.
Vulcan's judgment turned his way, and Corland experienced his second victory of the day.
Yes,
Vulcan said.
I have seen the calculus of expediency. I have seen its cost and its corruption. This world, too, is the Imperium. We will not save the Emperor's work by consigning a portion of it to destruction. That is the wrong sort of sacrifice. One that is not for us to make.
Lead us, Lord, said Corland.
We will follow.
Sacrifice, Zerberin thought. He stood in the librarium of the Dantalion. Around him were the chronicles of the Fist's Exemplar, tomes and parchment and data slates reached back a millennium and more to the very founding of the chapter. Zerberin was in the midst of recorded honour and pride, struggle and victory, and sacrifice.
He thought of the sacrifices he and his brothers had made over the centuries. He thought of their recent ones, and he thought of the sacrifice he had imposed on others, on other loyal servants of the Imperium, and upon its citizens. He was before the great armour-glass viewport of the Librarium. It was a tall oval, reaching from deck to ceiling. The battle barge's position would have been a low anchor orbit over Prax, if Prax still existed. Zurbrin gazed at the emptiness that was his work, the nothing that was his burnt offering upon the altar of victory. My crime, he thought. His chest burned with guilt and anger.
That is a lesson, said a hard voice. It grated like an iron door.
It seemed to carry its own echo, as though there were two speakers, the second voice coming from within the first, slithering into the real from a squirming abyss. Zurbrin looked over his shoulder as Calcator walked down the central aisle of the Librarium. The Iron Warrior stopped a few paces away.
You're returning to your ship.
Zurbrin ignored what Calcator had said. It was too close to a thought he had been struggling to repress.
We are. I believe we are of one mind on matters of immediate strategy.
Yes. Calcator and his command squad had come aboard after the death of Prax for joint planning. The short-term necessities were clear. The original purpose in coming to Prax had not been achieved. Both ships still needed repair.
I'm sure you have doubts.
Zurbrin grunted.
You might say that.
Doubts? How could he have anything but doubts? Unthinkable events were succeeding each other without pause. Traitor space marines walked the corridors of a vessel commanded by the Sons of Dawn. They were not prisoners. They were not under guard. They had been invited, and they left freely. And now the Fist's exemplar were going to follow the traitors. Calcator had made contact with an outpost under Iron Warrior's control. Communications were fragmentary, but it appeared the planetoid had not yet come under Orc attack. It was the best destination, despite a journey through the warp that would be longer than ideal, given the damage to the vessels. Calcator said he could guarantee safe harbour for the Fist's exemplar. Zurbrin could not offer that from an Imperial base. He wondered if even his ship alone could approach such a port with impunity. He thought not. Not now.
Are you questioning your choice? Calcator asked.
Of our destination?
No, Calcator nodded to the viewport. Of your actions.
He should turn his back on the traitor. He should not answer at all. If he must answer, he should say no. Whatever that implied, at least it would not reveal indecision, doubt, weakness. Instead, he obeyed the spirit of the perverse, and he confided in Calcator.
Yes, he said. How could I not?
To Zurbrin's surprise, he was glad of his response.
Exactly, Calcator said. How could you not?
His scarred lips parted in a grim smile.
He was a gargoyle, and worse.
Zurbrin had seen him fight. He knew the brutality that lurked within the Iron Warrior, but the smile was one of understanding.
What were your options? Calcator continued. Kill your allies or leave the world to the Orcs?
The choice was impossible.
Yet you made the correct one. The Orcs have lost a world, along with resources and supplies.
Zurbrin glanced at the absence of Prax.
The population, he began.
He stopped when he heard Calcator snort.
What of them? Are they better off dead than under the Orcs?
It was clear Calcator found Zurbrin's expression of concern ridiculous. His logic, though, was sound.
Die quickly or slowly. Those were their options. You gave them mercy.
He snorted.
They were weak and didn't deserve it. You were generous.
But choice was impossible,
Zurbrin agreed, trying to quieten his doubts.
I believe you have a better understanding of us now, then.
What do you mean?
Calcator's smile turned bitter.
You should come aboard the Palamedes. Peruse our librarium, enlighten yourself, learn the history of the Fourth Legion. It is a chronicle of impossible choices and thankless wars. While the other legions reaped the glory and the murals, we struggled in the mud,
Again and again and again, the hard decisions and sacrifice. Always sacrifice. And for what? Tell me honestly. You just struck an important blow for the Imperium. Do you expect gratitude? The answer came easily.
No. Condemnation, perhaps.
Again, no hesitation.
Yes.
He had ordered the killing of loyal forces.
And were you wrong?
No. To his shock, even this answer was easy. No, he was not wrong. There had not truly been a choice at all. He had done what the war had made necessary. His doubts became anger at the injustice of being condemned for preserving the Imperium.
No, you are not wrong, said Calcator. And neither were we, time after time after time, until we finally realized our sacrifices were meaningless.
He seemed about to say something else. Instead, he shook his head.
I must return to the Palamedes. We will speak again.
Calcator left. Zurbarin watched him go, thinking of sacrifice, feeling his anger grow into rage. Just before Calcator disappeared through the librarium door, Zurbarin thought he heard the Iron Warrior's voice once more. He could not have, because the sound seemed to be at his shoulder. It was less than a whisper, and more profound than a shout. It was a single word.
Brother.